IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Phil.
And I'm Crystal. And this week we delve into the people who make the schedules run smoothly and herd the cats. With credits to their names such as Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, Tomorrowland, Star Trek Beyond, and Christmas Chronicles 2. Taking their place on the Apple Box this week, the current chair of the production office department, Eva Morgan.
Welcome, Eva.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in today.
No problem.
Let's start off by taking a trip in the Wayback Machine, wind back time, and let's talk about Safeway.
Oh, God.
So you got into the film industry through Safeway.
Yeah, I was working as a cashier and I got a repetitive stress injury. I got carpal tunnel syndrome and tendonitis in my wrist. So I went on workers' comp and they didn't want to keep paying me to go back and forth back to work and keep trying at Safeway. So they said they would pay me to either do some training or training on the job if I could find. And I read an article about a local PM producer and I sent her my resume. Happened to hit her on the right day and the rest is history. It was the best experience because I got to follow a project from financing all the way through post because they actually cut it here. So I got to see everything.
So when we say post, it's the post-production process where they edit and color time and...
And even to delivery. I got to help make the posters. I got to help with all the paperwork that was required for all the foreign sales. It was a Canadian and UK co-production. So there was a lot of international paperwork to do. It was really interesting.
A trial by fire.
Exactly.
So that's a pretty unique situation to get thrown into right away.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, there's thousands of people working in the service industry. So tell us what skill that you developed, that you had, that transferred over into the production office.
The customer service. And, you know, because we're the first people, mostly for the crew, we're the first people that they deal with when they call the office or when they come into the office or they're looking for answers to their questions. You know, we're the first point of contact for a lot of people. And it's the same for people who are trying to break in. You know, we're the first point of contact, whether it's calling the office or coming in to drop off a resume for any department, although that doesn't happen so much right now, or emailing it in. You know, I think it's gotten a lot less personable with the email, which is unfortunate. You know, I try to respond to some, but we can't get them all.
Yeah.
So you're very fortunate in your very first production to work with somebody who mentored you. Is that something that's a keystone of how you've approached?
Absolutely. I try on every show. I ask the people who are working for me to pick something they want to learn, so that I can try to show them, you know, whether it's the second assistant coordinator or an office PA or a producer's assistant, sometimes, depending how closely they're working with us. It's like, don't be afraid to come and ask me questions.
So you've witnessed a huge change in the industry because you've been in it for so long. And so tell us some of the things that have changed over the years within the production office department and how you approach the job.
We've definitely got a lot more technology, you know, because as we've gotten more and more computer based, you know, call sheets used to be handwritten and, you know, faxing, thank God faxing has gone away. And so that's changed and how we get the information to people has definitely changed. And the programs have gotten so much better. But that's probably one of the biggest changes. And then there's also, because here, at least our industry is so tied to the US, we really see probably more than they do in some other places, the corporatization of the industry and how they forget that things like we're less litigious here when it comes to the paperwork, the legal contracts and the legalese and the insurance piece of it.
So you describe yourself as a herder of cats.
Yes.
An expert herder of cats.
Yes.
Can you talk about a time when you were on a project and all of a sudden you were facing immense logistical challenges and all of a sudden everything shifted and you pivoted and found a new way to do something and the sense of satisfaction in that?
Well, COVID.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's finding new ways to do just about everything.
Right.
And just the extra layers that have been added. There are some things I hope stick from COVID. The work from home, I think, has been great for some departments, mine included, because we are a heavily female department. I've had a couple of members come back who left to raise families who are now realizing there's maybe jobs they could do from home.
Right.
I think that actually spans across quite a few different departments. Yeah. So it's interesting because of the impact COVID's had on women in general.
Do you see those logistical challenges as opportunities? Like, is that how you approach it?
Most of the time. Sometimes it's just a frustration, or at least that's how it starts. You know, maybe you see it as an opportunity at the end. You know, I think we all, at least I know I do, go into a show and it's like, my God, that was so hard. And then when you look at it in the frame of, well, that went really well at the end, it's like, well, it was hard, but it was worth it.
Okay.
You know, the logistics on Tomorrowland when we were shooting in multiple countries, even on Mission Impossible shooting in multiple countries, you know, just the time zones,
right,
make it all more complicated, but it's worth it at the end.
So you've just noted two fantastic movies that you've worked on, and you've had such a rich career on these feature films. Can you think of a real standout moment of either someone you met or, you know, a situation that happened on a show that you went, wow, this is all worth it?
There have been a few for me. You know, I think back to Underworld 2, which was still one of my favorite movies to work on because there was so much more team than there is now. You know, we were shooting at Mount Seymour and we'd built a medieval village and it snowed. We got very lucky on that show. Every time we needed snow, it snowed, but we got a little bit too much. And literally, so we had half a dozen greens guys out there shoveling snow. And then all of a sudden the grips were there and lighting was there and everybody was just clearing a path. And it's like, that's the stuff that makes me happy about this industry because it's a team sport. You know, we can't do it without all of the pieces.
Absolutely.
It's a constant refrain in these interviews that we hear over and over again is people talking about how they interface with the other departments.
Absolutely.
And the production office is the hub. Right. So you're the central interface.
Nerve center, I call it. The ADs, the ADs, the director, all that, that's the brain. We're the nerve center.
Excellent.
Because we're what makes everything else sort of flap.
And, you know, you talk about it, you know, we all kind of feel like we become family and, you know, that really dysfunctional yet functional family.
Absolutely.
And you, in giving back to our membership and our union, have served on several committees over the years and have been the chair of the production office department for
20 years.
20 years.
Yeah. I'm heading into 21. I was just acclaimed for another 3-year term.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
I'm in the production office and I can't imagine someone else taking that chair. Can you tell us why you do that? And can you also tell us what you do in that position?
Well, the union only works with the participation of the members. And if the members don't participate, the union can't do the things that it's there to do. And, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, one meeting a year, that's all you have to attend, one meeting a year. I don't care if it's a department meeting, general meeting, just one. You know, and so I make sure that the communication happens with the department, from the union to the department and within the department.
Yeah, and I know as a member, having that sort of support network is so vital, and you don't really get that on non-union shows.
So in participating with the local, you've benefited from being part of the picture moving forward. You've been part of the bargaining committee 5 rounds?
Yes, this is 5.
This is 5. a lot of people don't really understand how the contract and the collective agreement impacts the day-to-day life. But from your perspective as a member of that committee, how important is that?
It's huge because it governs how the employers treat us, whether it's our raises or turnaround rest periods. And it goes across all the unions. You know, what we get if we leave the general area, per diem. And
I think it's so important for everybody, all those that are listening, if you are a union member, use the time for the collective bargaining agreement. When we call out, raise your voice, because that's what we do when we get to the table, is amplify their voice.
Absolutely. We have to hear what the members are saying. Even if we can't get something concrete on it at the table, if we bring it up and they know that it's out there, you know, one thing we have to remember and our membership has to remember is the people that we're negotiating with aren't actually the people we work for. And they aren't the people who are doing the day to day. They haven't been to set. Maybe one or two of them have, but they've never worked on set. When we say Fraturday, they don't know what that means.
So moving off of that, training, let's talk about training, because you've approved budgets over and over again. You see what the union spends on training and budgets on training.
Yeah.
You've participated in that as well.
I have. I've taken a number of safety courses, the BC Fed basic safety courses that we offer. I've done a bunch of seminars. I've set up a bunch of seminars for my department and for assisted with a couple of other departments, specifically around shipping. As more departments sort of have to learn more about what goes into getting something across a border. Right.
And that's a real benefit to the members as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everything should be a learning experience. If I stop learning, my brain's going to atrophy. Right. Every show brings a different experience. You may be doing the same basic functions, but there's going to be a different something.
So two things then. Give us a snapshot, day in the life of a production coordinator and the team that you surround yourself with. What you look for in those people?
You know, I look for people who have a strong work ethic. They don't necessarily have to be experienced. They just have to care, because that makes the biggest difference.
And that's something that you can't really train that into someone. You got to get...
You can't, but you can tease it out. You know, it may be in there, but it's been buried. You know, I think I have a bit of a history of pulling out people who've been, as I call it, beaten by a previous owner.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they require a little bit more work to find it and figure out where their strengths are and what they want to be doing and what's going to benefit them as well as the show. Mm-hmm. But I want people who are pleasant. I want people who are happy and who want to get the job done. Mm-hmm. You know, the production office it's relatively constant, busy. You know, I don't like going to set because there's way too much standing around doing nothing on set or waiting, you know, rush, 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 wait. Whereas in the office, it's more constant. You know, the phone's ringing or I'm working on a spreadsheet or a memo or a letter. People are coming in and asking questions or that sort of thing.
What's the first thing you do when you start work in the morning?
Coffee.
Okay, yes. No. For everybody. Really, right?
Are you the first person in?
Generally, no. I used to be. I've managed to get myself off that because I'm not good first thing in the morning. But when I was the first person in, it's checking the voicemail, making sure that there's nothing that we've missed. You know, my general rule of thumb, it'll vary on a shooting day or a non-shooting day, if we're in prep or wrap. You know, generally we're there, someone's in the office at least a half an hour before call or at crew call if it's around 7 o'clock. 7 is my deadline for when the office should be open. So it's checking the voicemail, checking, and if when their fax is coming in, make sure. Checking the production email to make sure, especially if when we're emailing call sheets out, that there have been no bounce backs, that there might be someone who didn't get the info.
What's a call sheet?
A call sheet is this is what we're doing today. that goes out to the crew the night before, tells them what time you're supposed to be there and where you're going and what the order of the business of the day is.
That's usually billed by the ADs, right?
Yeah. The ADs build that, and it'll usually go out the night before or a Friday for a Monday to let everybody know what we're going to do and what they need.
And that's changed over time as well. I mean, originally they're mimeographed and handed out, and if you didn't get one, you didn't get one.
Yes. Or we'd be photocopying them at the office. So a driver would drive the hard copy to the office, which would be signed by the production manager, and we'd have to run the photocopies and send them out, right. Send them back to set. So they always had to allow enough time for it to get back to set to get out. And if people were lucky enough to have fax machines, they could get it faxed and they wouldn't necessarily need to worry about waiting for it to get back to set. But in the age of email, the timelines have gotten much shorter. Because they can just email it to us. We print copies and send it back out, or they print them themselves. A lot of people don't want hard copies anymore.
Right.
The production office also, at times, plans the gigantic wrap parties. I'm having a memory here of a wrap party that because we worked on about 5 or 6 shows together, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So the Watchmen wrap party was a thing to behold.
Yes, that's still my favorite.
Yeah.
Can you describe it?
We did it at Bridges on Granville Island. Okay. We enclosed the entire dock patio with tents because it was February. We had the rigging gaffer and his crew hand painting light bulbs to be the little smiley face logo from the Watchmen with the blood dot. So they were painting them all yellow, putting happy faces on them and the blood dot. And we replaced all of the light bulbs in the chandelier in the upstairs area.
Wow.
We had a gobo, so the things you put on spotlights that make a design. We've had a couple of those.
Excellent. I just want to pivot a minute here. BC is known for having some of the best crews in the entire world. And you've worked with the top people that you work with people that work internationally all the time. Why do you think that we produce so many talented people here in BC?
I think a big piece of it is because the industry here, I mentioned earlier, is so tied to the US and tied to the LA industry. So we get to see some of the best and we get to learn from them. You know, that's one of the questions on the old school work permit form was, you know, will there be an impart of knowledge? And we've been lucky enough to be a big recipient of that. And it's great that people recognize it. As I was saying to Crystal, there was a Twitter post yesterday from James Gunn, who's been in town working on a Warner Brothers series, calling out some of our camera operators from 669. And that was great to see. I love it when people get recognized for their work.
And you started on your first productions were domestic productions here, right? Back with Colleen.
Co-production. And then, it was my first show in the production office was for Universal. It was Fear, No Fear with Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon. That was my first show in the production office.
I wonder if they remember that movie.
Probably not.
We ask this question of everyone that comes in. If you could give someone new trying to get in a piece of advice, what would it be?
See everything you can. And actually, I did that. You know, we had on my last production, Ryan Reynolds' training program. And, you know, we had some people who knew where they wanted to be and some people who didn't. And it's like, watch, listen, ask questions. If you're afraid to ask questions, find someone that you aren't afraid to ask questions of and let them help you.
In every single department, you know, some of them you need, you know, the hair, you need your red seal, you know, that kind of thing. But outside of that, it's so much of this industry is practical on set learning from other people.
Absolutely. 100%. Because there's a job for everybody in film. We're a microcosm of everything. So if you have a skill set that you bring, that can help get you in the door. But there may be something else that suits you better.
So the production office deals with a lot of technological changes.
Yes, the and accounting as well. You know, the movement sort of accelerated by COVID into the full digital, let's eliminate as much paper as we can, hit us pretty hard. You know, it was coming, but it was all of a sudden a hell of a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. And just the sheer amount of adaptability that the production office has to, you know, has to be so fluid with every single moment, because we kind of react to the domino effect that happened, the decisions that happened. Yeah. And then
we're the big reactors. We need to be ready for at least three different scenarios on a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what in the winter, what happens if it snows and we're shooting outside and we're going to have to run for cover, or even when it's in the rain, you know, if they decide to run for cover, what does that mean? What's the other scenario we have to have ready?
And so here's a good question. What keeps you going? Like, why do you keep?
I couldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it. And so I do enjoy the challenge, and I love the people. You know, I've been very lucky to have worked with a lot of really great people and to be in a position where I can be selective about what shows I do and who I want to work for. I said to a lot of people on the last show, with everything from COVID and that extra stress, I would not have been able to get through that show if it hadn't been predominantly with people that I'd worked with a lot. Mm-hmm. Because we all cared a lot about each other, because we've known each other for so long, that I think it helped us want to follow the protocols and be kinder to each other and just picking up the slack mm-hmm. whenever anybody saw it. Wouldn't have gotten through it otherwise.
You know what? You know what's interesting? I'm having flashbacks here, because I remember what I love about working in the production office is that everyone sits down in the morning. You know, you do the everything that you said, the checking, the emails, the making sure this, that, and the other. But you talk about the news of the day. You know,
water cooler talk.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I miss that. It's a really nice sort of bonding environment, and you go through the fire together, and you get upset at each other, but then everything's fine.
Yeah.
Those of us on set, we call it an apple box talk. Just saying.
That was one of the things I definitely missed from COVID, was the interaction right. with people, because we weren't supposed to cross pollinate.
You've seen a tremendous amount of change to the physical structures where you do your work. There's been a lot of reconstituted warehouses turned into studios and spaces that you had old office chairs from 1950 that barely worked. And then, you know, with the first one that I was in where it was a proper office was probably Mammoth, when they redid Mammoth.
Yeah.
Are those actual physical facilities getting up to standards now?
They are, because they have to.
Right.
Because the number of warehouses for us to rehab aren't there.
And I look at the production office as a place where the employer could make accommodation for those that are differently abled if they had the right facilities.
Absolutely. They might have to make some changes. You know, most of our offices aren't necessarily wheelchair accessible or easily wheelchair accessible. I know we have one art department member who's in a wheelchair, and I've done a couple of shows with him. And, you know, he has a table. He has a sit-stand table for himself that he brings. So it's, you know, we need to make sure that we can get it picked up and we can get it into the office, and that he has a path to get to his space that's always clear, and that there's a wheelchair-accessible bathroom for him, which has been a big one in some of the purpose-built stages or offices, because if it goes over two levels, you've got to make sure you have a space for him on the lower level.
And I think that productions are actually becoming more conscious of it and are trying to find ways to address equity and inclusion. And
absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot for your time today, Eva.
My pleasure.
It's been fantastic getting a glimpse into the machinery that keeps production chugging along. And I guess that's it for another episode of Apple Box Talks.
For more episodes and to get your career rolling in the film and television industry, check out ourwork.ca.